This country was built on a distinctly American work ethic. But today, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries, sending away good jobs and diminishing our capability to make things. American Giant is pushing back against that tide. They make the kind of high-quality clothing staples you need for a comfortable, stylish, and active summer wardrobe. Like vintage-style tees, tough tank tops, breathable polos, lightweight sweatshirts, shorts, and so much more. All made right here in the USA. From growing the cotton to adding the final touches. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs for seamsters, cutters, and factory workers in towns and cities across the United States. And it's about more than an income. Jobs bring pride, purpose. They stitch people together. Support America's workers and get 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com, code STAPLE20.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Sons of a Gun, a podcast about the DCU. I'm Alex Gunn, a son of a gun.
I'm Justin Penguin.
Oh. Peter, you a son of a gun or a penguin? You're Pete. And we are the sons of a celebrity penguin. I don't want to say who it is, but there's not many of them, so I think you can figure it out. We're going to be talking about the Penguin episode 4, Sent-Ani. You got to pronounce it like Watto does in Phantom Menace.
Do you? It's Ani. It's a reference to Watto.
Hey, Sent-Ani.
I don't think. Please stop.
Never. When are we going to get that, by the way? When are we going to get the gritty, realistic Watto Star Wars series on Disney Plus?
Don't
like
put that out there.
I'm going to keep putting it out there. I'm pitching it.
They are listening. This is where they get ideas for stuff.
Yeah, Kathleen Kennedy.
Alex, they're making it. This is an offensive and general accent that they decided to use there.
Sure is,
I don't know. I disagree. It's so wizard. Anyway, we're talking about the wrong franchise here. If you haven't watched Penguin Episode 4, Sent-Ani, pronounced normally, on HBO or Max, please do, because we're going to spoil it. But big episode that I think we expected and we've been talking about pretty much as the first episode of the Penguin in terms of a flashback showing us what happened with Sophia Falcone, filling in dots in terms of what happened with the Hangman murders. Turns out, big spoiler here, she's not the Hangman. Carmine Falcone, the guy known for choking and killing women, turns out to have choked and killed a lot more women. He, in fact, is the Hangman Killer, as we find out over the course of the episode. But Sophia is sent to Arkham for those crimes anyway and left to rot for 10 years. When she comes out and when we come back to the present, we find out what she's going to do next, which is kill basically everybody in the Falcone family by gassing them after doing a big speech, the Sent-Ani, which is a toast, I believe. At the end of the episode, the only one she leaves alive, seemingly, are Johnny Vitti and Gia Vitti, the kid, his daughter, who she takes out into the greenhouse.
The solarium. I have a couple questions about this.
Yeah, what's
How
up?
Do you think she controlled the gas in the house that it didn't kill Johnny Vitti? Is she a real HVAC? Did she study
HVAC?
She opened his window.
Smoking, and it kept it open for him.
I
saw the logic in it. I was like, really? Gassing an entire house, an airtight house, open one window, live, no problem.
Yeah, you know those old houses. They built them like lockboxes.
Airtight. That's right. The Quakers were airtight with their carpentry.
Shoot holes in comic book logic? What? Come on, dude.
So I want to start off with something we were discussing before we turned the cameras on, which is just a broad overview of the episode, because a lot of TV critics, a lot of folks had put up, like, this is the holy shit episode. This is the one where
it
goes crazy. This best of the season, can't wait, it goes crazy from here. So a lot of hype going into this episode. From hearing from you guys beforehand, it sounds like you were a little underwhelmed, or at least Justin, you were underwhelmed, and Pete, you're mad that people died, I'm guessing.
I'm not mad that people died, but this was...
He's a Falcon. You know,
I think the problem I'm having a little bit with DC right now when it comes to movies and apparently TV shows is darker isn't always better. You know, this is really a very triggering, very fucked up episode. We learned some crazy, insane things, pun intended, but man alive. And it's just, it's awful. We're kind of tortured in this episode. What happens to Sophia is just... You know, unfortunately, a very old tale about, oh, a woman has a different opinion than me. We'll call her a witch or whatever and just throw her in insane asylum because that's something you can do. Just awful to have to kind of roll with. And the, I mean, when she, how, you know, like all the stuff that happened, it was just very brutal. I mean, you know, when you got searched going into Arkham, I mean, that was also very graphic. So I was just having a hard time with, like, I would like to have fun. I enjoy comics. I enjoy these characters very much. And yes, life is hard and you know what I mean? And this is really very unflinching. But man, you know, whoo, that's a lot in one app.
I agree with you, Pete.
A lot in there.
That was a lot of my issue was they did such a great job of establishing a tone that I think we've been talking about on this podcast of being a show that like goes hard but also has moments of fun where we get to see these characters, especially Penguin, being like weird and specific. And then this episode sort of threw that all away and showed us just – it was like challenging us. I was taken out of it a bit because it felt like it was purposefully being like, you think that's bad? Watch this.
Yeah.
And kept grinding down on it. And I think a lot of TV shows do that for the reason Pete's saying, like, dark seems cool. Dark, you know, wow, it's so dramatic that it got that much worse for her. But I don't know. It just, it took me out of it a little bit at times because it felt, I saw the script in those moments where I was like, oh, it's, you didn't need to do that to show that she's having a hard time.
Do you know what the thing, I think I'm a little more positive than you guys on this episode. I liked it. I don't think it was over the moon Emmy material necessarily, like a lot of critics have talked about online, but I think it was a good solid episode of the show. I hear you about the humor. The thing that pushed it over the top for me is a very weird specific thing that I think we've been talking about all along, that the show isn't packed with Easter eggs. Like, it's not just, you know, drop it in characters. We've talked about how there's Eve Carlo, but it doesn't matter whether she's related to Clayface or not. She's just a character on her own. They're using these things and picking and choosing them, not to be like, ooh, look at this, so much as it's part of the world. We're living in Gotham City. I think this episode went too far in that direction, particularly by introducing two characters here. We got Magpie, who is a classic DC Comics villain. Not the biggest one, but she is one of those Ricardo.
She does this horrifying thing where she likes shiny objects.
Yes, exactly. Like the Magpie of Myth. I think this take was a little more based on, there's a great book called Arkham Asylum Living Hell by Dan Slott and Ryan Sook, where Magpie is Poison Ivy's roommate. And I think this is what this was taking that from. She's a little crazier, a little kookier there. So they're taking that. But the fact that they were like, it's Magpie, not some random character or prisoner or whatever, like would have happened in the previous three episodes. But like, look, it's Magpie, a villain you kind of remember from DC Comics. Now we're going to beat her to death with a carrier tray. There's that. And then they also introduce Summer Gleason.
Shout out to Summer Gleason. Great to see. Animated series.
Yeah, this is the character. This is the reporter from Batman, the animated series, who they subbed in for Vicky Vale for unknown reasons other than she wasn't in romantic interest for Bruce Wayne, whatever reason. She shows up here, and I was like, oh, Summer Gleason, that's fun. Character from the, oh, she's dead as well. Okay.
Yeah.
And
murdered off, established, and then murdered off camera without any fanfare.
And every other character, and I could be wrong about this, but I looked up every other name that Sophia mentions at the end of the episode. None of them are anybody. So they like very specifically brought in for pretty much the first time two named characters as cameos in this episode and then brutally murdered them, which as a fan, maybe that's what you're feeling, Pete. But as a fan, I was like, this is a little off-putting. You could have just made them generic characters and that would have been fine.
Well, but it feels like there's a little bit of that. Not fully thinking through the choices here, where it feels like, oh, let's Google a couple names to throw in here. Magpie feels more deliberate. But like Summer Gleason's like, oh, throw that name in here. Doesn't matter what happens to her or if... Not that I'm like a Summer Gleason stan.
No, I'm neither a Magpie nor a Summer Gleason super fan, other than the fan sites that I run, but those are not important here.
Yeah. Well, I am celebrating 500 days of summer, my ongoing Summer Gleason festival.
Yeah.
Wow, good for
you. A lot of parentheses in that.
I do think there's a point there, Alex, where it's like Sophia's getting tortured, but then me as a comic book nerd is getting tortured as well, where I'm just kind of like, What are we doing here? Like, I understand that, like, showing Sophia's story is very powerful and cool and amazing. But, man, alive, I would also like to, you know, have some fun or at least have something to root for, because it's like, I'm like, who am I rooting for? Am I rooting for Oz? Am I rooting for Sophia? And then you want to root for Sophia, but then that ending where she's finally happy, I'm like, oh, wow, this is a... Yeah, this is
Put
tough.
Your pants on. We got to talk.
Yeah, we got to talk. Put your pants on. And also, like...
I agree with that. You should be in pants.
I think there's nothing more than generic than doing a toast and saying, like, two new beginnings. And the fact that that was said there was very well written, I thought.
Well, yeah. I did like the... And there's some interesting stuff happening in this episode. But I think it's an interesting point to say... Like, who are we supposed to root for now? In this episode, it's telling us that we're supposed to root for Sophia. Oz in the beginning is a total, he betrays everything just for his own self-interest. Not a likable character at the top of this episode. And then we follow her and sort of show why she is in such a place. And that's an interesting to sort of duel. You know, now you have two protagonists rather than just the Penguin that we had before.
I would have loved to root for Sophia, but she like saved the child, but not one of the parents, which is...
No,
I
she
mean,
didn't. Johnny Vitti is Gia's father, right?
Oh, really?
Yeah, she saved
she does
the
feel like she might kill him. I don't think Johnny makes it out to be a dad.
No, she's not going to be like, put on your pants now,
and then shoot him. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, she's going to leave him alive, but he's going to die, I think, over the course of this. She's not keeping him alive to be like, and now be a good dad. Put your pants on. It's fathering.
I think if you do that, he might be the greatest dad after that. Just out of fear, he might just have to.
If he was doing pants off, dads on, I mean, like, that's not good parenting, you know?
So maybe
like,
there's a spinoff called Fear the Walking Dad that's coming. And it's going to be about him, like a fun comedy thing where he gets to be a good
and
dad.
And he keeps losing his
pants. Would not to get too much into supposition or anything, because we don't know what's going to happen next. I think Johnny Vitti is kept around because he's manipulatable, and they've already discovered that in previous episodes. He's a person she can control. The rest of the family, including Johnny, betrayed her, as we find out over the course of this episode. They all wrote testimonials saying that she's always had mental health issues in order to get her arrested for the Hangman crimes. But he's the one that they've already been able, she and Oz have already been able to force to do things for her. So she's got the pull over him in terms of, I've got your daughter, I killed everybody else. You are already controllable. I have all this blackmail on you. Come on, you're going to work for me now. And that also ties into another thing that I always not have a problem with, but is weird to me about a lot of these mob shows. I'm not thinking of the specific example, and it's been like tickling the back of my brain. But a lot of these shows where they'll have a mob and they'll be like, we're building up a mafia, and it's like two people. Like, there's no mob there. And at this point, she's killed everybody else. It's her, Johnny Vitti. How is she holding control of anything in Gotham City? I guess we'll see.
Well, especially Oz is her other person. And he's like, she's definitely going to kill him.
Right. Oz has Victor at this point, towards the beginning of the episode. And as we left him, he's like, we're in it now, Vic. We're in it now. Sophia has Johnny Vitti and a child, Gia Vitti. And that's pretty much it. Great opportunity for the triads, I think.
I also think, like, if two people is all you need for a mob, we could kill in Gotham. Let's go. It's time for the CBC mob to get in.
I can't believe after seeing this episode, you would want to go anywhere near that place.
Here's my question, though. Just because we're taping this podcast, we're doing it on Zoom. Do I have to put pants on to be part of the mob? Or
yeah, put your pants on. It's time to mob. It's time to mob. But I mean, like, the way the arc goes for Sophia is, Carmine's like, you're going to run the family. And then she asks one question, essentially. She's like, did you kill all these women? Probably not. And then he's like, I'm ruining you now forever. And it's just, I get that. I like that idea. But I don't know what
that idea.
Well, the idea that,
do you know what maybe doesn't work about it? Is, or the two things that are a little squeaky there are, one, Carmine offering it to Sophia in the first place, when clearly the whole theme of this episode and the whole crux of Carmine is he doesn't like or respect women. He kills his own wife. He kills seven other women, and then he sends Sophia to jail. Sophia drives it home in her final speech, where she says, for 10 years, men have lied to me. They think I'm broken. I'm not broken. So it's a little squeaky there that he'd be like, I'm giving it all to you. You're the nice person, are in charge of my crime family. The other part that doesn't quite work is that they never have a conversation with Alberto about it. Like, that's a tension point that they don't exploit at all in this episode. And that was surprising to me. Sorry, Pete.
Well, first off, the fact that you want them to exploit more tension in an episode, I'm kind of blown away by. But
I don't know. It's dramatic potential that's left on the table, I think.
There was in this episode, I couldn't take any more motherfucking tension. I'm all
But the show's telling us that this relationship with Alberto is very important, but we've never seen why or how. It's just like, and she was in there for 10 years. He's like, hey, sis, everyone's keeping you in here. Anyway, see you later. It's like,
over the 10 years.
They weren't allowed visitors. She wasn't allowed.
No. The implication was that they did visit each other. We got to see that hallucination in episode 2, I want to say, which I think was partly based on reality. And they clearly worked out the plan to market and sell Bliss over the course of the 10 years. So they have met. But to your point, I mean, this is a Sophia episode, but we don't get a lot about Alberto. He's just steadfast and true with the one person who doesn't betray her. And again, other than being your brother, we don't know why. When he has, mind you, just one last thing, he has a very good reason to betray her, which is she has stepped in and taken over the mob in his stead. So if anybody has motivation to keep her in jail, it's Alberto, and we don't get to see that. Maybe they're holding it for later, but
I mean, it seemed like they were pretty close as brother and sister. So, like, I mean,
and he just wants to be a party guy, ultimately.
Yeah, he just wants to, you know, enjoy some bliss, you know,
chase that bliss, find your own bliss, bless bliss.
What do we think about Mark Strong as Carmine Falcone taking over from John Turturro? Very similar actors, always going out for the same parts.
He was, the glasses were doing so much, and they were for Turturro. They
glasses and the hairline also. The wig that he was wearing, that was like earlier, 10 years earlier, Turturro, not quite as gray, not quite as fuzzy.
It felt like he was just trying to get close to Turturro rather than portray a character that was scary and interesting. I wish there was a little bit – he was given more opportunity to be different to make it a better portrayal.
It's such a weird choice. I wonder what happened there. You know, they said that John Turturro was too busy. I think the phrase they used was he was not available to us. My guess is, this is a total supposition, but Severance season 2 was kind of filming on and off for a while, for like a year, year and a half. And that's obviously the biggest priority for Apple TV. So I imagine they had like a hold on him and it kept changing so they couldn't get him. But why get Mark Strong, an actor who could not be more different from John Turturro?
He's the same height.
Is he?
Nice.
Did you look similar, that up, or do you
it's
know
a similar height build? You know what I mean?
That's, is he? No, John Turturro is like a tall, skinny guy. He's wispy.
So is this guy.
Mark Strong? No, he's built. He's buff.
He's built.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
Mark's, his name's Strong, dude.
It seemed like two tall, skinny guys, but
No. Mark Strong, if you don't know, he's been in the DC Universe a bunch of times. He played Sinestro in the Green Lantern movie that everybody loved.
Right. Sinestro, famous skinny guy.
Yeah. Dope. And then Savannah.
Famously skinny.
Yeah, I guess he is a little skinny. Yeah, but not in the movie. And Savannah, he played him in the two Shazam movies. Again, universally beloved.
Yeah, especially that second one. He really scares the shit out of the Shazamly.
Yeah, I agree with you on doing an impression of Turturro rather than a pure performance. So just to kind of wrap this up, I imagine it was like a last second thing of like, can you come in and can you do this? And he was like, no problem. Sounds good.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, it sucks when, you know, like schedules and stuff get in the way of something like that. So, yeah, you would hope it's nothing more than that. But, yeah, who knows?
What do we think about Julian Rush, a character that is also being pointed to as somewhat important here? And in the
super
episode,
creepy,
in the previous episode, she Sophia is still going to him as her red light psychologist. And then in this
strobe
episode, he
therapy.
Actively is keeping her in Arkham and torturing her, but then gets her out, apparently. And they have a scene here where she's like, I know why you did that, the way you looked at me.
No, that's not necessarily what I took from it. I think he's sort of doing like the good soldier thing, you know, where, yes, he's following,
just following
orders from, what is it, Dr. Ventress is the main doctor, who is clearly bought by Carmine Falcone. He feels bad with it. He's clearly in love with Sophia.
But he was working in the apparatus keeping her there for that 10 years.
No, he left. She says he left at a certain point.
Yeah, he only did like 8 years and then couldn't take it of torture.
Alex, why you've got standing for Rush?
Dude, he's super creepy, bro.
I Rush for Rush. You know what I'm talking about?
Wow. Man, 500 Days of Summer and Rush for Rush? Are you sure you don't like the band Rush?
I mean, he was
a character.
He's a great actor. I loved him in Luke Cage.
Mm-hmm. Thea Rossi, good guy. Maybe that's why I like him. I don't know. He's clearly like, he's in love with Sophia. She digs into him at the end. It's like, you kept me there. You left me there to die. He's very from the direction of like, what else could I have done? This was my job. I got myself out. I couldn't get you out. I don't think he got her out. I think she was let out after 10 years when Ventress left, right?
Yeah, I thought
it's a little murky.
He was making a case to her that he was helping her, I guess. Mm-hmm. And I was like, what? What are we meant to think of this guy? I don't
super
know.
Creepy. She does a lot of amazing monologues in this episode, and the one of them is as she's leaving, you know, she kind of does this flirty thing and gets like real close to his mouth, like maybe she's going to kiss him, but doesn't. And
I mean, I think what this episode is doing is exploring, I mean, in the, this is the lightest way of putting it, but like toxic masculinity in all its forms, or at least the way that men control women in all their forms.
Yeah.
And there's wildly different iterations of it over the course of the episode. There's Carmine, her father, who turns on her on a dime, like we've talked about. There's Alberto, who's there for her, but not actually doing anything to help her, like we've been talking about.
Yeah.
There's all the other people who straight up betray her in the Falcone family. But Julian Rush, I would argue, or at least the way that the show presents it, I think is the most insidious form of like, he has a crush on her. He really likes her, but he's not actually helping her. He's helping himself. He's like, I did all that I can. Could he have done more? We don't know. We don't know if he could have like broken her out of Arkham and they got on the run or anything like that, like they do in the hit movie Joker 2 that's currently running in theaters.
Don't say hit movie.
Hit movie.
That's not. That's
definitely not a hit.
No. Taking hits is what I mean.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah,
be
getting
specific.
Punched in the face by the box office.
That movie, isn't Joker 2 the number something like Morbius level numbers?
It did less than Morbius on the opening weekend and then dropped 81% to the second weekend, which is the biggest drop for a comic book movie of all time.
Holy shit.
Yeah.
That's wild. Sorry, Dad.
Sorry, Dad.
Yeah, Joaquin Phoenix is your dad. We should have called this podcast Sons of a Phoenix.
Phoenix Risings. Phoenix is rising.
Anyway, my point being that, like, that's what they're exploring here in this episode. And again, it comes back to that phrase of for 10 years men have lied to me. Like, she drives it home. She says it out loud.
I mean, that's
exactly what's going on.
It's a fun idea, right? This idea of like gaslighting, and then she gases this whole family. And then, you know what I mean? Like, it's an interesting twist on that idea, you know?
Yeah.
I always have a question at the beginning of what you say, Pete, and then you do explain it by the end, but you always start with something that I'm very shocked by.
He's like a comic book.
Yeah, this is it's a fun idea to gaslight women.
And whoa, like, that's not what I
start.
Said.
No, that's where it starts. No, I know. But that's what it sounded like you're saying. Bro. And I was like, oh my God, what is Pete saying right now? And then you're like, to contrast it with gassing them at the end and turning it back on them. I was like, oh, okay, I get it. That's maybe you want to lead with the negative part more than that.
No, I like it. I like it. It makes it cancelable. Why is she still going to see him? Like, it doesn't
Julian
Rash. Make sense to me.
Well, she's the only one. He's the only one in her phone. I mean, at this point, that could help. You know what I mean? Like, even if she doesn't trust him, it's still somebody to call. And because she was kind of, I thought she might have been dead in that alley for a moment there.
The logistics of that scene were weird to me. I got to be honest, because like here's the continuity of what happens. Right. We loop back and see a little more of the end of the last episode where Victor ran into that guy with his car. But the Maroney family has Oz and Sophia dead to rights. They're about to execute them in that alley. Victor comes out, smashes a guy with the car. Oz jumps in. They leave Sophia there bleeding from a head wound and falling unconscious. And the Maroney's reaction is, oh, shit, got to get out of here?
I mean, it was weirdly staged because we just see Mama Maroney be like, hurry, let's go. I was like, there's one car.
You can shoot
that
car and Sophia plenty of time.
I do think they were maybe – the idea was this was the first move in an attack. And so they were like, oh, maybe there's a bunch of guys with guns about to show up.
But they just – there's not.
It was filmed like the cops pulled up to a keg party in the woods. And Mama Maroney was like, oh, no, my mom's going to find out. And jumps in her car and drives away.
Yeah. Or quickly shoot Sophia. I don't know. I mean, obviously, they got to keep her around. But like to get back to the Julian Rash thing, I think in the moment – she spent not 10 years, but however many years Julian Rash was there being told by him that he is the only person she can trust. He is the only person who is actually there for her in the entirety of Arkham State Hospital. So her initial gut reaction is call him, get him to help. But when she gets there, I guess seeing the pills, she realizes that he's as broken and medicated as anybody else, and he's not actually there for
her. That was interesting. The pills were like the gun in the drawer, you know, the big reveal. Yeah. It kind of turns out to kind of reverse shock therapy is rave therapy with all the lights and stuff. So I didn't know that. So that's a fun thing to learn in this episode.
Yeah. It was also, while we're talking about things that are weird, there's that one creepy lady who attacks Sophia at the beginning, who's unchained.
Oh, dude.
That's one that I was like, but that's nobody. That's a character named Abby. And it just felt like in an episode that was packed with characters we know from other parts of DC Comics, it's weird to be like, and here's a crazy person. I was like,
yeah, but we couldn't have another.
We
couldn't have another person we know get killed in this episode. Sure. I mean, come on, that would have been.
But also, like to the point, I was like, so let's track this character arc. She's crazy, doesn't like that Sophia killed women, so she attacks her. And then later, she kills herself with a fork in front of Sophia. I was like, what? Why? None of that makes – why is that necessary?
I'm going to throw a theory out there that I don't know how true this is, but I think it was even before the Batman came out, they announced that they were developing a bunch of different TV series based in the same universe. They announced there was a Gotham PD series. I may be getting some of these details wrong, but they announced there was a Gotham PD series that they were developing and possibly an Arkham Asylum series. Apparently, a lot of different things changed. Eventually, the Gotham PD or some bones of it slowly turned into the Penguin and some other things. The Penguin, as we've talked about, was initially going to be the first chunk of the Batman Part 2, and they're still working on some form of the Arkham thing, but it's not necessarily going to be Arkham or anything else. So this is a long way of saying my theory while watching this is a lot of the ideas that they had for whatever this Arkham Asylum series was going to be ended up in this episode. So there might have been characters, there might have been scenes, there might have been like visuals and other things that they had been working on for a couple of years. They're like, ooh, this is a great place to throw it in because we're in Arkham and this is our first chance, other than those brief scenes with the Riddler and Joker and the Batman, of actually seeing what Arkham is like in this universe. So potentially there might have been excitement there of like, all this stuff we have on a whiteboard somewhere we can finally put on screen.
Yep. But it's also this weird thing of like, every time I'm watching an episode, I'm just kind of like, man, Batman is not a very good detective, it turns out, because so much shit is going on and he's nowhere any of this.
He's got a big case, maybe.
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about the Batman thing, because I've seen that a lot online, and there's a couple of things that specifically contradict that, both of the Batman on the show. One of Batman's first lines in his opening speech in The Batman is, it's a big city, I can't be everywhere. He says that, which
is some of these places. I mean,
things are exploding all over the fucking place. Like, people are gassed. There's a lot of death and destruction happening, and Batman's like, we don't even see Commissioner Gordon. Like, there is a ton of shit going down.
It's a big
nothing.
City. I can't be everywhere. So there's a lot of things going down at all times. Second, he ends the Batman with him on the roof of Gotham. I'm forgetting what it's called. It's not Madison Square
Garden. Gargoyle Factory. I think he was on top of the Gargoyle Factory.
Gotham yes. Gargoyle Factory. Gotham Gargoyle Factory and Carnival Supply Store.
Yep.
In the Clown District.
He's on the roof of like Gotham Square Garden or whatever they call it. And he's helping people from the flood caused by the Riddler. His closing speech is all about like, maybe I don't need to use fear. I can inspire hope instead. This takes place at this point, we're about like two-ish weeks after the end of the Batman. Unless he's like, nope, back to fear again, he's probably helping people deal with the flood. Like, that is what he is doing at this point.
Oh, so he just was like, yo, forget all this. I'm going to take like a FEMA timeout. And
he might be renovating the mansion. You don't know.
Okay, yeah.
That's time-consuming.
Yes, that got partially blown up, along with Alfred, who's still in the hospital.
I'm just saying,
also, hold on, I want to just finish up what I'm saying here with the Penguin, because this point irks me. It's the same thing we get with the Marvel movies, where like, why doesn't Iron Man show up in this Thor movie? Is like, because he's not in this Thor movie is the essential reason.
He's not
and
in
it's
the
also
he's not
more
invited.
Boring. But it's also established in this show. Watching the show, Gotham City is huge. We get that in the first episode. We talked about it in the first episode. The Penguin is driving everywhere. There's so many things going on in Gotham at all times. It's not a small neighborhood that Batman could swing around and see all the crime. It's an enormous city with boroughs and districts and other things. And then beyond that, I actually think it's good that Batman's not here, because he is a non-factor at this point to the gangs, much to their detriment down the road. But at this point, they're like, there's one guy dressed up as a bat. He fought this guy who's dressed in like duct tape on his face. I don't know what's going on here. There's a flood. Doesn't matter. Moving on. We got our own things to deal
Let's
with.
Let's do our made-up
I think
drugs.
That's a better story choice than bringing Batman in, frankly.
I agree with you.
I don't want Batman to show up. I'm just saying that like it's a lot happening in between panels here, where after a little while it was like, I mean, if I'm a detective and I'm just getting my kind of like just trying to figure out like, how am I going to be a vigilante? How am I going to do stuff? This smoking gun that is Arkham Asylum, you might want to just every once in a while maybe have somebody swing by and maybe look into some of these crazy murders.
Oh, well, that stuff was – okay, sorry. That stuff was happening 10 years earlier when he had left Gotham City – traveled the world to train up as Batman, and
okay,
he doesn't
so
even
just
become
not around. He's just not around.
Yeah,
that's
during
cool.
the flashback of this episode, he doesn't even come back to Gotham City. He's in year two when we catch up with him, the Batman. So he's been Batman. Sophia has been in Arkham for 8 years by the time the Batman shows up in Gotham City.
I mean, I think it's two directions for me, because like, what do we want Batman to like drive past a panel or just be like walking through a shot, looking at his phone, like, oh, like I'm on another case. Like, no, we don't want that. That damages the story. And the story doesn't want Batman in it because it's a different story. So all that makes sense. And we have to suspend our disbelief to just enjoy the story without thinking Batman could show up in any moment, because we know he's not. But on the other side of it, we all got into this whole game because we're like, Batman's cool. And they're like, hey, guys, great news. We're doing a show about Batman's city. Oh, he's not in it. Yeah. Don't worry, he's not coming. It's like, what? Why? It's just, it's an odd thing that in comic books, like you mentioned the MCU, it's like, you guys are throwing a big party, but the one person we know is not coming. And it's like, well, why, what are we doing then? And it's, yeah. There's a, they're both things are, I think we're allowed to think both things, but they can't, it can't ever change from what it is. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Unless we just do only Batman stories.
It would be
stories.
Interesting though, to Alex's point, it would be funny if like at the end of the episodes, like we zoomed out at Gotham and then you just saw Batman in a corner, like bailing out water. And then the next episode,
I mean, That's a funny idea. You pan out,
and then half Gotham is frozen, and he's trying to chisel it down. You know what I mean? And then at the end of the episode, you know, just like fun little, like, oh, he was almost there.
I would take it even further where he's like, he's caught in traffic. He's like, hey, move out of the way. I'm trying to get over to the Falcons just died. I got to go. Forget it. I'll go
home. It's a big city. There's traffic on the 405. Can't make it in time.
Alfred, you cut the tip of your finger off. Well, I guess I can't fight crime tonight. Yeah. I have to go take you to the
Alfred,
hospital.
I'm coming back, yeah.
Alfred, are you a baby? Because tips of fingers grow back in babies. That's a fun fact.
Anyway, what? We should also mention, that is a fun fact. It's true. Up to age two, you can cut off the tip.
How do you know that? Why are you cutting off
that?
Your kids?
You want to know how I know that? Because one time when I was clipping my daughter's fingernail when she was a little baby, I cut her and she started to bleed. And I've been terrified about that. I was like, oh my God, if I damaged her finger permanently? So I looked it up and I was like, oh, good fun fact.
She's like, no, she's like, got lizard tips. My daughter's got lizard tips.
Yeah,
so then you just started slicing and dicing, right? After that, you were like, well, fuck this then.
Yeah, fuck this. Could eat for a week. That went dark. Anyway.
Just like the show.
Just like the show to bring it back. Any other moments from the episode we should talk about?
The only other thing I would say is Oz is weird. The Oz of this episode is interesting to me. Like, he's fully, like, debased and undercut. Are we just going to jump right back into him being sort of full on cam guy in charge of nominally in charge of his situation and this show?
Who knows?
Yeah. Good commentary.
Thanks.
Wait, can I answer that directly before you move on to whatever you want to say? So
who the fuck knows, man?
I really liked Oz in this episode, actually. And one of the things that I liked is how relatively subtly they dealt with his betrayal. The reason I took away that he betrayed Sophia is she told him to shut up in the back of a car. She says, after
by betrayed, you mean when he told Carmine about her going to the reporter. Yeah.
Yeah. But we don't know what that conversation was, because based on what he says in the previous episode, it seems like he probably said a lot more and was angling for a lot more and was playing the angles. But the way they play that scene in the car after she sees Summer Gleason and he's like, you know, you really shouldn't be talking to reporters. She says, shut up. And it just cuts to like a look of him being like he was just slapped. And that, to me, that's the moment where he's like, well, that's it. I'm going to burn her whole world down. And I love that. Like, I love that that is very consistent across the character of Oz throughout the show, is he makes rash, terrible decisions for everybody around him based on the littlest of slights.
Yeah. And it's also tough because you know where Sophia's come from, because she just like had her world destroyed with this whole like, hey, it turns out your father's been murdering women left and right like you can't believe. And then so she's kind of doing like that. So, of course, she snaps at Oz and maybe says something she doesn't believe, because they showed a couple sweet moments between the two of them, which also kind of made things that much harder because of where they were versus where they could be. But man, yeah, it was a tough scene, because it was like, I understand why she did that. You know what I mean? Like, she's getting a lot from all over the place. And then the one person that, you know, she trusts or likes or feels at least comfortable around a little bit, you know, says something that kind of really, you know, cuts her. And she's like, shut up. Nobody likes you. I mean, it was just a reaction. And so it was a little bit like, oh, that's it, Oz, one time, and you're just going to kind of flip the table over and fuck it all. So, yeah, I understand where you're coming from, Alex. I agree. Like, yeah, that was a kind of slight. But yeah, I mean, you know, some very damaged people, you know, fighting for power here. This is, it's a insane show. But one of the lines that I really thought was very amazing was when Sophia says to the young creepy doctor, like, you know, I don't know how to convince you that I'm sane. You've already made up your mind about me. I was like, oh, that was such a very cool, powerful kind of moment in all this madness.
Yeah.
And then the thing that really wrecked me was the kid who was playing hide and seek, young Sophia. And then she's like, mom, like, and like holds her hand like she's still alive.
So
like,
dark. Oh, unnecessary.
I was like,
dark.
We don't need this. I don't know what I did to you, DC, but I'm sorry. Please don't make it this dark and graphic. We could have. Oh, that was just too much, man.
Pete, I have a question for you, actually. You had mentioned, I think it was the last episode, when Sophia dug into the pesto pasta and was eating with her hands, and you were like very pro that. You were like, yeah, two thumbs up or two scoopy hands up for the pesto pasta eating it. This episode, she eats a meatball with her hands. How'd you feel about that?
Glorious. It was absolutely glorious. I mean, just such a fun thing of like playing with this high society world and her being like, fuck you guys. I'm going to do these things to make you uncomfortable. It's such a cool power
move.
Make
me uncomfortable. Use a
and the face she made,
Pete,
to the kid.
You've been taking down high society as well when you go to like Ruby Tuesday salad bar and just eat with your hands, right?
Yeah, yeah. I remove the sneeze guard and I get in there. You know what I mean?
Oh, I got a fun name for this episode, by the way. Justin, you'll probably really like this. Ready? The Red Sauce Wedding.
Oh, nice. Good.
Thanks.
Good. Italian.
Yeah,
game
because it's Italian.
Thrones.
And I got, yeah.
It's a Game of Thrones.
Hey. Anyway.
Zidane.
Couple of other things I wanted to throw out there that I thought were nice in the episode or interesting in the episode. So when Sophia finally stops unsuppressing her memories of finding her mother dead, she remembers Carmine having three scratches on his hand from where his wife tried to stop him from killing him. We saw this in the Batman as well, but there's a pretty famous thing in The Long Halloween where Catwoman scratches Carmine Falcone's face with three scratches. That actually happened to the Batman with Catwoman, but I thought this was a nice callback to that. Like, it's the same sort of just like little subtle visual
little
callback
detail.
Yeah, little detail. Really like the thing where Sophia's slowly going crazy in Arkham and she's tearing off the wallpaper and revealing
you
cool.
like that you like
that
her
cool.
being tortured you enjoyed
no,
yourself during that
visually,
moment
the visual
that
choice
really cool.
of that wallpaper was
and cool. ultimately revealing it to be the set of the bedroom I thought was very very well done. I also really like the shots of Magpie through the screw hole in the wall. That was really cool.
I meant to say this earlier, but I think visually this episode was great. Well shot. The Arkham uniforms being the orange stripe against the bleak backdrop was really cool.
Yeah. I'll agree with you. The Arkham uniforms there. I have a question. So what you're saying is she's in Arkham and she can just peel off metal walls, and underneath that is her room's wallpaper, is what you're saying?
Yeah. That's true of any insane asylum.
Yeah.
They go through that much detail. They say okay, before we throw somebody in there, what was your childhood home like? And then they match the colors.
Shawshank Redemption, he cuts through the wall, too.
Behind the Rita Hayworth poster.
Yeah. That's what it's all about.
That's
when you're in one of those places.
You fuzzy britches.
Nice.
Quick question about the end. She gasses them. Do you prefer ass, gas, or grass? Pete? Would you prefer she ass them or grass them?
Pete's about to get grass-lighted. Alex is grass-lighting
you. I have no idea what the fuck
Alex
you're talking
about. Alex is grass-lighting you, Pete.
But I think maybe you're asking
better
like
than ass-lighting you, I guess.
I mean, it seemed like they all died peacefully a little bit, so maybe that's a better
That's how I want to go. That's how I want to go.
Just
I really saw
sleep,
myself
a couple
in this
of them
episode.
Just kind of like, you know, dying in their sleep.
Oh, yeah. I want to die like the guy who falls down by the bar and his glass is right there and he's like, what the?
Yeah, it's called
his
a nightcap.
Words were probably, oh, thank you.
Yeah, it's a nightcap.
Again,
you have one
I don't
want to
make fun
you
of the gas thing, but like, I don't think when you get gas, you don't die standing there with your drink and just fall over. This isn't
that house was too big for that to work. Like,
of course,
I can
it was nonsense. It's crazy nonsense.
Yes. But again, a good visual. I don't know where she got the gas mask from necessarily. Maybe that was something that tied back to Arkham, I guess, but...
No, it was in the kid's backpack. That kid's into like World War II.
Smart kid.
Yeah. Always that kid, we're going to find out the next episode, collects a lot of Nazi memorabilia, and it's really
Come on. Jesus Christ. Can we not have something fucked up in this?
Any final thoughts on the episode before we wrap up here?
No notes. Perfect.
I hope things get better. I don't think they will, but I hope
they're not going
to. It's
going to
get worse.
It's going to get way worse. We've talked about this before, but there's every indication that Oz is going to kill Vic by the end of the season, which is going to be so upsetting.
I'm done.
Sophia may not make it out as well. This isn't even a theory. I'm just wondering from a comic book Easter egg perspective in Dark Victory, she's called Sophia Gigante. That's because of her size, the way that Tom Sale draws her. I wonder if they're going to give her that nickname because she's like, she did a big deed by killing everybody. Yeah.
I just thought of a great way to end this series. Little girl gets a fork and stabs Sophia in the neck.
That would be nice. I thought of a better way. We cut to Batman and he's like waking up after a long nap and he's like, did I get gassed? What just happened? And
yeah.
Alfred's like, no, Master Bruce, you were just asleep.
No, you just ate a turkey dinner.
It's sleepy. The tryptophan, Master Bruce. The tryptophan. I know him. He put him in Arkham.
Anyway, if you'd like to support this podcast and all the podcasts, we do patreon.com/comicbookclub. Also, we do a live show every Tuesday night at 7 p.m. to Facebook and YouTube.
Sure do.
Come hang out. We would love to chat with you about the Penguin, despite everything we said in this episode. Apple, Spotify, Android, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow the show at Comic Book Live on Twitter/X, Comic Book Club Live on TikTok and Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast and many more. Until next time, whoever your dad is, put your pants on.
Yeah, put your pants on, Dad. You're about to get grass lit.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get juicy California red, green, or black seedless grapes for 99 cents a pound. Then get tender USDA choice boneless beef chuck roast for $4.99 a pound, all with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger, less than 5 miles away. Or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.